Right now, though, we're talking rugby league with a man that loves his league more than most, Sam Ackerman. G'day, mate. How are you?
Very well, mate. Unhealthy is how it's been described in some channels. So, yeah, more than most, I'll take.
More than most, indeed. Now, there's a lot of different games to talk about. It was a big weekend of rep footy, but we should start with late last night in Perth. Now, it being confirmed, the westernmost suburb in Sydney, the way that New South Wales play there, and the New South Wales Panthers up over Queensland quite convincingly.
Yeah, look, normal service has resumed. It was just a blip that game won. But it was outstanding by New South Wales, and they had a point to prove. They were in the contest in game one, but they were certainly short of their best, and they got, to coin the immortal Gus Gould phrase, they were out-origined by Queensland that first game. They didn't come with the brought skill, but not the intensity. And I thought that intensity was there in bucket loads in that game. I think the tackle that stands out to me for that is Nathan Cleary absolutely monstering Kalen Ponga. He got put in report for it, and it was an HIA assessment for Ponga. I've got to say, I'm still wondering where suspension can come from a tackle like that. But regardless, they showed this aggression. They showed a ruthlessness. And even when things were going tit for tat in that first half, once they got their opportunity, which came from a sin binning for the Queenslanders, with Felicia Kafusi put in the bin, from there it was just a dominant run. They took every opportunity that came their way, and they kept the foot on the throat. It was great to see from a New South Wales point of view, and Queensland were showing up in that second half in particular. They when they lost that momentum, when the wind got out of their sails, they didn't know how to get it back. And everyone talks about Cameron Munster being the next Wally Lewis and how he can change a game. Well, he had a few opportunities, but in fairness, a lot of pressure was put on him and he didn't come up and deliver when was required. So, yeah, Nathan Cleary made a major statement, and I think that it's the obviously the cliche version that set up a cracking game three, but it is now anyone's bet because we've seen what the bounce back factor is and the need for redemption. New South Wales have just written the book on it for Queensland to go sit down, read through and come back themselves. They're a talented group. They're playing in Queensland. So I certainly don't think it's a fait accompli, but the mental and moral advantage goes with the Blues right now.
Yeah, that's how it feels. There were some changes made, of course, to both sides, injury enforced for Queensland, but Freddie really pulled the trigger, didn't he? And one of the, they won, and they won well, but one of the changes he made that it feels like it probably didn't work as well as he thought, and maybe he'll go back for game three, we'll see. But Upper Side Kotosau coming in for Damien Cook. I mean, Damien Cook ended up playing 46 minutes, which would suggest that maybe that was an experiment that didn't quite work as he thought it might.
I'm with you. I don't think that the two hookers were the dominant factor that they should be when you've got two on there. But listen, I was critical of only having one. I thought Damien Cook is a virtual 8-minute rake going up against Harry Grant and Ben Hunt. He was shown up in game one. So having that extra energy boost worked. I personally would have liked to go the other way around and had Damien Cook start and have Coruscant come on and spend maybe a collective 30 minutes on there. So you still get a lot of Cook, but you get fresh energy and fresh legs. I think it made a difference, and it made a difference in the delivery too. I think it's worth pointing out that when Nathan Cleary is in that dominant mode, if you're the hooker, you're not looking to run. If he's putting his hand up for it and your seven is playing like that and says, I want the ball, it's not a conversation. It's you pass it on. So I don't think it was a failure. I don't think they grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and became a dominant duo. But I also don't think they did anything wrong along the way. I don't look at them as like, oh, well, I wonder what they could have done better. I really think it came down to the guys who deserved the ball, got the ball for New South Wales, and that's a smart move for any footy team.
What about changes potentially for Game 3? I mean, it felt like in the first half, Stephen Crichton got found out a wee bit at right centre. They certainly attacked down that side. I mean, do you think that Crichton's starting position is in danger and we might see a Talakai get the full 80?
Yep, there's a chance to keep into account too that Jack Whiten could be back, and that changes the complex because he was the best on ground for the Blues in game one. So he was only missing through injury, which allowed both Crichton and Matt Burton to get a start. So I don't think Crichton set the world on fire, and I definitely don't think his position is safe. But I also think from a momentum point of view, that Fittler will be loath to make changes for the sake of changes. Whereas you have a cohesive team unit working, then you want that to to drag on. That's what we saw for Queensland too, and it doesn't necessarily work out. It's really hard to put those in. But if Jack Whiten's available, he comes in. So it's who comes out. Does Burton switch sides to play with Tupou? Does he? Do you allow Whiten to shift across to the right side? It's a tough conversation, a tough decision to make. But of the 17 that took the field, I'd say the one in most danger, if you like, of holding their spot would be Crichton.
Yeah. Okay, mate. What about in the Maroon side of things? Obviously, didn't go well for them. They really missed Reuben Cotter, didn't they? The dynamicism he gave them around the field in game one was certainly missed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a few injury concerns to go with as well. I think Ponga had the head knock, see how he goes. And there's also talk that Kieran Munster was carrying something off the back of that as well. So he's getting a scan to check himself out, make sure his shoulder can hold up, because that's obviously an almost unfillable hole for them, the way he's been at Origin level. So a lot of questions as they go. But I think you'll find that, injury aside, Billy Slater will pick and stick. It was the what worked in his era as a player, and I don't think that he's going to come out and really throw anyone under the bus. He's a first-time coach. Unless there's somebody with an overwhelming amount of experience to call on, he will pull these guys together and say, it's game on. We're going to Queensland. We're going home. This is our chance. I believe in you. And that's how, that man management style has worked so well for Queensland for so long. But they are up against a very good New South Wales side. So I don't look at it and go, well, these changes will turn things around for them. I think they've probably got the right squad to do it. It's just whether they can lift themselves back up to the level we saw in game one.
Yeah, I think he's got to address the middle four. I mean, you look at it, I mean, being between the two starting props and Lindsay Collins and Josh Papali'i, they didn't play 80 minutes between them, and Tino only played 38 minutes at lock. So obviously something not working there.
I just think that they were gassed. They didn't get any ball down the other end, and that isn't in the second half in particular. And that's a complete anomaly. There was one, I think the stat was, they had one tackle inside the opposition 22, and that was essentially a fumble. So they didn't get down to the area where they needed to be to make to put the pressure on, and because of that, and considering that they played the first 9 minutes with a man in the bin, I just think they were gassed. I don't think they had the energy to punch through, and that's why they didn't have the energy to make the tackles. There was some soft tries that scored along the way. I just put that down to New South Wales putting relentless pressure on.
All right, let's talk some international footy, mate. We saw the Kiwi Ferns get up over Mate Maatonga, and they did it pretty convincingly. And then the Kiwis themselves followed it up. A lot of firepower in this game, 26-6 at Mount Smart Stadium. And the spine of that Kiwi side looks really good, and a lot of promise going into the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. The first of the Kiwi Ferns, it was great to see them out there and get a run. And yes, it was dominant. And respectfully to the female Tongan side, they are not at the same giant killing caliber as their male counterparts. So it was wonderful for them to get a test and get a chance to play against the Kiwi Ferns. And they're a team, much like a lot of our female sport teams, at the moment, they've got a lot of talent and a lot of potential. They just need to work their way back up to the status and level that we know that they are capable of. So it was a good, ruthless encounter. They didn't take their foot off the brake. They're scoring tries in the first couple of minutes. They're scoring tries in the last couple of minutes. They really pushed on. So it was great from the Kiwi Ferns. As from the Kiwis, the spine was wonderful. And the depth of talent in that Kiwi spine selection group, I'm talking about the wider squad and those not picked in this team, is at a level that I have never seen as far as the skill level through. We've always had some very good players in 1, 6, 9, and 7, but I would say that the ability to take someone out and put them in, if I told you Sean Johnson was coming in at halfback now, who didn't make the squad for very fair reasons, you wouldn't blink and say we're screwed. There's a guy who's proved himself at test level. There's a lot of guys out there that you could throw in to those roles, and it's wonderful that they are in that situation now. But those are there. I thought in general throughout the context of the game made smart decisions through it. It's a really intelligent spine. We don't just have good players, we've got good players from good systems. Joe Manu obviously isn't a fullback on a regular occasion, but he ran the house down over 400 metres is phenomenal. A record at that level, at any level of the game, is just amazing to watch him go for a guy who's played 10 minutes of fullback at NRL level. He is a smart decision maker. He put in good kicks. He put himself in good positions. And same thing goes for the halves and hooker. It was a smart move right throughout. There's a couple of options. I'd like to see a little bit more killer. I think there was some tries left on the table, but they didn't make a lot of bad decisions, just a little bit of final execution. So that was a great situation to see this team in and to hold this Tongan side. And we will note that this is not Tonga at its absolute peak. This is not all their players and everybody that they will play with in a World Cup context, but it was still a very good Tongan side with a very good pack. To hold that pack to 6 points, I thought was really impressive. And they're without their coach as well. Christian Wolf is still coaching over in Super League, so the guy who'll run them in the World Cup wasn't there. Dean Young was the interim coach with Wayne Bennett offering some advice along the way. So, yep, there's rationales and reasons, but they confronted their first test match in 2.5 years, and they played beautifully, Ricardo. That was a wonderful contest to watch. And we can talk about the polish, but when you do keep in mind that these guys haven't even had training camps together over that whole period, it's great to get out and see them play like this again. And it's just wonderful to see the Kiwis play and the Kiwi Ferns, because you think of all our national sporting teams, can you think of anyone that's had to wait longer of that level and caliber? Instead of wait long between drinks because of the COVID disruptions in the Kiwis. It's been a very long time coming, and it's just a joy to watch it again. So watching Te Iwi Kiwi get performed at the start, it was special.
It was special, mate. And, you know, you talk about that depth too. I mean, the fact that Kieran Foran is your 14, guy with his experience and guile, I mean, he didn't even get on till I think the last sort of 10 minutes. And Sean Johnson, as you mentioned, didn't even make the squad, neither did Cody Nikarima. So probably more depth than I think we've ever had in the playmaker roles.
Yeah, and I think Cody Nikarima, Kieran Foran was the wrong pick with 14, if that's how they're going to play. I would love to have seen maybe an Aaron Clark or even Tamati Martin get a run in that role, because I don't see, look at Foran and go, roll. He's going to be the guy that comes on and brings that spark at dummy half. He was solid when he came on, for sure, but he's not a guy that's going to, you wouldn't go, I'm going to give Brandon Smith, 55 minutes and give 35 through to, 25 through to the other hooker being Foran. I'd like to have seen someone with a bit of spark so he can see that 1-2 punch, so we can build a bit of depth at hooker. But Brandon Smith is just a you might as well tattoo that number 9 jersey on his back with it. He will be, it's his as long as he wants it, as far as I'm concerned. Much like Isaac Luke, what he brought to the Kiwis for so long, he's just, his spark and his energy is phenomenal. But you need to build that depth in the 9 area. I think we've got a lot of good players, but I think we don't need to work on those combinations. So to me, that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, I mean, if there was anything that sort of raised my eyebrow about the selection, it was Niokore at centre and then Joey Manu at fullback, because that felt like a defensive move, and I'm not doubting Madge McGuire when he looked at the size of this Tongan team. He maybe thought they needed some more starch there. I mean, hell, we could always do with you and Aitken out in the 3 jersey for the Warriors, I think, given the amount of second rowers we've got. But I think from an attacking point of view, we'd look so much better with Tamati Martin in the 1 and Joey Manu in the 3, wouldn't we?
I was told that before the game, but watching Joey Martin, watching Joey Manu go, I was more than impressed. I was prepared to eat my words on that. He is not only is he a world class centre, he's obviously proved himself as an international caliber fullback. Now it's just one game. He needs to do it more often to be world class player. But he's shown he can prove himself. He can hold his own at an international level there. So I'm comfortable with how it worked in the wider scheme of things. And I think that maybe the reason behind it is I think that Tamati Martin is still coming back from what was a career ending situation with his blood clot. I mean, that he's on the field again is remarkable, but back into the stage of his career, perhaps there was the thought of not putting that level of exposure and pressure on him as a test fullback. But if you pick him in the squad, you've got to be prepared to pick him, right? But I'm okay with how it panned out, and yes, I think it was a defensive move, but I think it's also very clear that Madge McGuire wants this team to be a defensive team, and I'm okay with that because they've got attacking options. If they can restrict teams, if they can make sure that just the simplest of facts is they score less points than the Kiwis score, then the Kiwis are in a healthy position. And that's what we love to watch the Kiwis play with flair, and we saw plenty of it. And when you've got halves and outside backs like we saw on the field in the weekend, then they will always have let alone, the forwards with that run from James Fisher-Harris. I mean, anyone in this team can produce something, but that defensive starch is not a renowned factor. Big hits and a tough packers, but defensive starch and showing up to make tackle after tackle and running teams down when you're up by 20 with a few minutes to go, that's not a renowned feature of the Kiwis. If that can become part of their DNA and part of their fibre, then they're going to be an awfully hard team to stop. One day the Kangaroos will have to play Test Match Rugby League again. They'll have to remember that they do have an Australian team. It's not just the Australian merit team that Mal Meninga names his figureheads after an Origin series, and they do have an obligation to play against, the rest of the bloody world. One day when they play again, they are going to be a good side. But if the Kiwis can have combination and can have faith in a structure as opposed to just putting champion players together, then they are a chance of winning a World Cup this year. This was a marker that needs to be laid, and I think a defensive marker I'm comfortable with.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I look at the draw for the World Cup, and going to form, you would think the semi-finals are going to be a repeat of what we saw Saturday night with New Zealand playing Tonga, and then on the other side it'll be England versus Australia, all going well. But, I mean, what we saw from Samoa, what we saw from PNG on the weekend, it's not cut and dry.
Yeah, and we're building an international widespread interest level now where it's not going to be just a walk up. And Tonga can take huge credit for that with what they've done and being, giant killers and taking down New Zealand, taking down England, taking down Australia. And Samoa are not far away from being able to follow in those footsteps. And that's wonderful. But the main thing is that rugby league is held to ransom by the Australians. And I understand why State of Origin is their top product. They control it, but it brings them a lot of money. And would you get 60,000 people to a rugby league test match in Perth? No, you would not. Under any circumstance, you would not. So that shows you the value of what they have as a product. But because of that, and because they don't put rugby league first, how is the game going to grow? And they have a responsibility at some point to say, do you know what? We need to make sure for this game, for us to be the biggest brand possible, for the Kangaroos to be what the All Blacks really are to the world, then they need to play more test matches and be involved and be prepared to get their, play a team without your Origin players if you have to, whatever, be involved. It happens in cricket, it happens in other sports where you can't have your best players at any given moment, but get out there and help to build this game. Can you imagine if the All Blacks put the North Island versus South Island game ahead of test footy? And then every now and then we'd go on tours every now and then. Of course not, because the game is big and the money is in markets are in playing overseas. But we've seen the home nations being of the Northern Hemisphere. We've seen them put a stranglehold over rugby union for a very long time, and particularly in the past where things kind of went on their basis. But it's an absolute travesty to think that the game can't grow because Australia holds all the marbles. And if they if they can see the benefit of the international game growing for them, then perhaps. But the fact of the matter is they don't. I understand commercially why it doesn't, but I get a little frustrated. I mean, the Kangaroos are essentially becoming the British and Irish Lions of rugby league. We see them every now and then. We're supposed to be grateful for their presence when they do. But as a long-time Kiwis fan, I'm ready for the Kiwis to hold that place at the number one in the world rankings because the Australians don't play. I want them to be number one in the world rankings because they beat the Australians regularly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. As I said to Andrew Voss this time last week, why is the team ranked fourth in the world dictating international footy to everyone else? It needs to be looked at. Hey, just had this text come through too. Just get your comment on this before we let you go, Sam, from Goose. Joey Manu is being selected at fullback. People need to remember that is his position. He's a fullback playing centre, not the other way around. He said that a number of times, but unfortunately is stuck behind Tedesco. Roosters have won 9 out of 10 games Manu has played at fullback. It's certainly giving Trent Robertson something to think about, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. What he's thinking about is what great depth I have at fullback. He's not thinking. There's no way in the world that he'll be playing there ahead of Tedesco, and Tedesco's got the track record. And I don't think I've barely seen a moment where I've thought, well, Tedesco's form means he needs to be replaced in that position at club level. So he is preferred to be a fullback for sure. But it's his natural position. It's not his position. Playing at fullback is a role that comes with minutes and time and experience. And for all we know, Trent Robinson is giving Manu heaps of training minutes at fullbacks as well to make sure he's up for the play for when it comes. My point I'm making about Joey Manu is when he is on the field, I have faith in what he is doing. Whether it's at centre, whether it's at fullback, he's a really intelligent footballer, and I've got no problem with him being at fullback. Certainly after watching him in that performance, I did have a little trepidation because we've all seen across whatever footy code you want to watch, players who play out of their preferred position, or sorry, their regular position, thrust into another one. That he can play fullback is very different to being a fullback. And I think Goose is right, is that it is a natural position for him. He filled it well because he plays it well. But it must be said, he doesn't play there a lot. He doesn't get tested out there by, in the throes of battle as often as you'd like. And you'd certainly say, it'd be rare to say you're comfortable with a guy playing a position that he's only played, 9 or 10 first grade games for in that position in general. But Joey Manu's a freak of a talent who had a hell of a game.
Yeah, he did indeed, mate. And I tell you, the other thing is, at times in the second half, he almost played like a six. He had the ball in his hand so many times, and that's probably something else that Trent Robinson and Madge McGuire can look at going forward. Hey, Sam, thanks very much for your time today, mate. Always good to talk code with you. Could do it for hours on end, but we'll leave it there and catch up with you again soon, eh?
Take care, mate. Talk soon.